This week on the Inside Flap.
My 6-year-old daughter, I was watching her while my wife slept the other morning. She was just like, "Dad, this is weird." And I was like, "I know this is weird, but I've got to get these ideas out or I'm going to lose them."
That is working!
Yeah, exactly.
Theory, I like
that's
that.
A great theory.
Well, yeah. And I, as far as the cat goes, I don't think the cat's...
Applause for that.
Because your cat is pretty sensitive. Right? I mean, mm-hmm.
He's neurodivergent.
He was real sensitive when he sunk his claws into your thigh.
Oh, that's right.
Recording that night down
he chased
basement.
Me. The thing chased me through the house and like...
The thing!
Normally, an animal will back down. So I tried the old stand my ground thing with this cat.
Stood your ground, yeah.
And that was not the right strategy.
No.
That thing just kept coming.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado, this is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us for episode 182. of the show. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome. Seated across the room to my right is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
And on the couch, barefoot and smiling, is Andrew Dowd.
Excelsior. Now, I must say, I mean, Dave is barefoot, yep. Laura is barefoot, right. But somehow or another, it's worth noting that I am barefoot.
Yeah,
I think I'm used to seeing you wear socks.
That's
I don't know why.
Because you've been wearing socks for a long time now, so it's just something we're not used to.
Yeah.
That's because I got a...
Is it Labor Day? Is that why?
A blister.
Yeah, where's that blister? Andrew canceled our tennis match this morning, claiming he had a blister.
He does have a blister.
On the back of my heel. And so...
Okay, you talk into the microphone. Nobody can hear. He's blister. Literally holding his microphone towards the window.
A blister on the back of my heel, and so I've been wearing like these...
Okay. Anyway.
These clogs all day.
Oh, yeah. Sexy. Yeah. Sure.
Yes. That's right. Long time
listeners. Oh, you get thrown.
No, we're not. I know. Sandra's bare feet is really throwing me for a loop. His hobbit-like feet. We're not in the snack shack today, as it's 127 degrees here in Colorado. So we're inside in the air conditioning in,
in September.
In Medtown.
Oh, Medtown.
Yeah, in Medtown. Oh. Got a great show for you today. We're joined by A.G. Riddle. Yes, Andrew?
So, you know, people might think Dave is exaggerating, but it was close to 100 today. And if you looked at the weather, it's going to be mostly close to 100 almost the entire week.
I know. Yeah. And they say we've got 4 days, and then... This is what bugs me every single time. And I don't know about where you listener live, but they'll say, oh, it's going to be 79 on Thursday. I guarantee you it'll be 87 on Thursday. It won't be 79.
For sure.
You'll just start to look at that forecast. It'll start to go up and up and up. The difference is sometimes when they have a snowstorm expected, they'll say, oh, it'll just be 3 to 5.
All right. That's when they err on the other
side
of
caution. And then the next time you're like, we got a foot of snow. And they're like, yeah, a little more. Got a little more.
Well, speaking of heating things up, A.G. Riddle joins us on the show today. He heats things up. We have a great conversation about his new book, Lost in Time. We talk about his, I always like talking to these authors, and you think they're so organized and so well put together. Here's a guy who really has no clue about organization. He's not sorry to talk about it.
And, wow.
So, great conversation with him.
I like that.
Yeah, and we'll have that for you. In just a second, his new book is called Lost in Time. His books include The Atlantis Gene, the first book in the Origin Mystery Trilogy, and I chatted with him from his home in North Carolina. We'll have that for you in just a second. But first, now last week I got on these airwaves and I told you guys about how I went out running with gnats all over my face and embarrassed myself. This week had kind of a similar sort of a situation. I got to meet with my new assistant principal. I should say my new supervisor.
Well, I haven't heard this one.
Had a nice chat with her, or I thought I had a nice chat with her. Then after our little conversation was over, we were in my classroom, you know, talking about the upcoming year and whatnot, walked down the hallway to the bathroom, went to the sink to wash my hands, and I look up at my face and what I see. Now, Now, I talked about the gaping wound inside my mouth, right? It's like the size of Delaware. And it's only now, after 2 weeks of biting my lip and one batch of penicillin, only now is it finally starting to get better. And because of this, I've been, because of this wound, this festering sore inside my mouth, I've been slathering on this stuff that's called Ambisol. It's also called Kanka. I prefer the Ambisol.
They used to give it for babies when they teeth. They have like one for babies.
Right, exactly. Yeah. What it is it's a syrupy, goopy, brown liquid. It's really the only thing that numbs the sore and gives me any kind of solace from just constant pain and irritation. And now, side note, my dentist actually urged me not to use this stuff because she was trying to tell me that I was making it worse, even using the words a chemical burn. I'm like, listen, lady, Dave, it's the only way for me to get any kind of relief, any salve from this wound.
You paint this stuff on.
Yeah. And she's like, have you tried Tylenol? I said, yes. She said, have you tried ibuprofen? I said, yes. And then she grunted and walked away. So that was like, okay, thanks, doc.
That's the same solution I could do. Yeah.
Anyway, because of my constant application of this brown goopy stuff, and I use Q-tips to do it, and it causes my mouth to fill with saliva. And sometimes it does is it kind of leaks out and dries up and forms a ladies, you out there? You listening?
Oh, they're listening.
It forms.
Andrew's feet sound like a virtual paradise.
What it does, I hope you're not eating, is what happens is the brown goo will kind of leak out. And without me knowing, especially I haven't shaved for a couple of days, it'll get in there and it'll form like a kind of
a crust. Is it a crust?
Yeah, like a crust around my mouth. And this is what happened. I'm looking at myself in the mirror and I see like around the side of my mouth, like literally like 35% of my mouth. It's got this brown crust all around it right after my very first, with my new, by the way, new supervisor, new assistant, AP. New AP, first time I've ever met her. And I've got, it literally looks like I've taken a Hershey bar, slammed it into my mouth, and then wrapped my tongue around one side of my mouth, leaving this brown residue on my mouth.
You know that's all she could think about when she was talking to you.
I'm like, and I'm flashing back.
Because then, because what you do when you see someone like that, she doesn't know you well enough to tell you.
Right.
And then you also start wondering what could have caused it.
Yeah. And I'm flashing back and I'm thinking, yeah, she was not like smiling or like, usually when I meet people, I make them laugh and make them smile, but she was kind of distant the entire time.
She was grossed out.
Yeah. She's entirely grossed out.
You know, this could be a good premise for a new book, mm-hmm. because this could be how the zombie apocalypse starts.
The brown crust.
Yeah, well,
brown.
Andrew, don't think you're getting off too light, because I flash back, speaking of flashing back, to when I went up to Granby last month to Andrew's Mountain Chalet. And I went for a hike. I came back from a hike, and Andrew was there. First of all, he told me he had to work all day. When I got back, he's power washing his deck. He had just finished power washing his deck right in the middle of his work day. And I look at him. I'm like, Andrew, you got a little green stuff on your mouth there. He's like, oh, yeah, it's toothpaste. He was brushing his teeth while he was power washing his deck.
Multitasking.
I guess. He's a multitasker. And I said, yeah, you might want to clean that up. Meanwhile, I go out for a bike ride. I come back an hour and a half later. He's still got the green stuff, the green thing.
No Zoom calls.
I was like, well, here's the thing. Don't read ahead. Oh. Yes, he had a Zoom call while I was gone.
Yeah. So,
that's funny.
So I was working, and every once in a while I get like, 20-minute break between calls. And so then, one of the things of working
from home. I think
it's
perfectly fine.
Is jump
they
out
say
there.
It helps
and,
your brain.
Yeah, and, get some fresh air and. Power wash the deck.
With toothpaste all over it. Yeah. Did you ever hear back about that? Did you bring that up? Because you said you sat on that whole meeting with a big green gob of toothpaste.
Isn't that funny?
I've had a few embarrassing things happen on conference calls, so it wouldn't be the first time.
What else?
We're not getting into it. No.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. All right. Hmm. Any pantsless incidents that we need to know about?
Not pantsless, but let's say I will
shirtless?
Tell you. One is, I was basically on a call, and there was a camera incident where the camera kind of fell off into my lap.
Oh, no. And people are like, man, what are we looking at here? What are we looking at here?
And the camera was basically falling into my lap. And somehow or another, I had my hands occupied where I couldn't just reach down and grab it. So I was multitasking.
What are you using? Like a GoPro or something?
No, it was this is my one.
It's like
computer.
A cube.
I had like another camera that hangs on the monitor.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Oh man, right in the old groin.
Oh, yep. That's really funny. That's really funny.
So somebody from the UK is like, my goodness, what are we looking at here?
Is that a zipper? Is that a zipper? What are we looking at your zipper for?
You know, as you get older, though, you just don't. I don't look in the mirror anymore.
Then that's exactly right. I mean, this is twice now.
But I just don't.
Happened to me. Andrew, has happened to him.
Yeah,
we just don't look at ourselves.
We just don't. We kind of rely on someone. We can't be bothered anymore. We almost rely on someone else just to tell us.
Yeah. Mm.
Unless you're Andrew, and then you're just going to get distracted by power washing and forget.
Yep. That's what's been going on with me. Oh, I did also make a girl cry twice on the first day of school.
Are you kidding me?
Twice on the very, very first day of school. Apparently she doesn't like loud noises.
Oh.
And I'm a little loud in the classroom.
Is she...
She cried twice.
What do you call it? Neurodivergent?
I think so. She quickly found another class. We got her taken care of, but the kids won't let me forget about the first day of school.
Oh, she's neurodivergent for sure.
Twice.
Oh, that's awful. Yeah.
Now, I mean, all things considered, I mean, being sensitive, right, caring for people, because everybody's wired differently.
Yes,
right,
for sure.
And with A.G. Riddle as well, you know, I'm anxious to listen to the interview.
A.G. Riddle did not cry during that.
Well,
did not make him cry.
But it's one of the things that is, you know, as a person, you've got to figure out what works best for you.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I think that's life, is you got to figure out what works best for you. But
yeah.
Did anybody give you a heads up that somebody was in your classroom?
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen, at the beginning of the year, you get,
so you knew.
We are bombarded with stuff. I have 150 kids. I don't have time to look through
every
the backgrounds
thing.
Of every single kid. And yeah, we do get reports. And I had not time. I had not had the time to look them over before the first day.
Well, you found out.
But I found out. I found out, and she found out that my class was
I would
not
say,
for her.
Though, it's not for her. Your class wouldn't be for her if she doesn't like the loud noises. Drama would not be.
Absolutely not.
That's all drama people do, is they get dramatic all day long.
And the thing is, I had looked over her her report, because you have to look them over beforehand, if I'm being honest. I do look them all over, but... There's you can be prepared for it, but once you get in, when you're in there and you got 40 kids in front of you, you do your thing. You are who you are. And at this point in my classroom, I am who I am. So
yeah. And you're loud.
I'm loud. Anyway, Laura, how has your week been?
My week's been good. And we had a mystery solve. So I have been sleeping with one eye open, Andrew.
Like Metallica.
Just like Metallica.
Right.
So we have these inset grates, wooden grates, and they are HVAC. These are returns in this room, but people know them. They're floor grates. Your heating, your air conditioning frequently come out of them. We have new ones in the addition that are really nice. They're inset. They're hardwood. They look pretty compared to the other ones in the old part of the home that are kind of janky. They're the ones that are like metal and they don't fit that well.
Right.
So... these are air returns, so no air comes out of these things. It just is to help circulate the air. So what we have been noticing, I noticed it first, I think, is that the return vents had popped out one day.
Uh-oh.
So they were out. And I thought, oh, that's weird. I bet Dave did something when he was cleaning. I'm going to put it back in. I hoped the cat wasn't down there, you know?
Right, because it really just opens up a big
it's a hole.
Hole into the vent, the duct system
so
in our house.
I'd only really just noticed one.
And
so I noticed
the right
one
on the floor there.
Near the window.
Right.
And I put it back in. I located the cat. I was like, okay, that's fine. A couple days later, I see two of them, one on each side of the room, popped out, laying like next to the grate.
Hmm.
Andrew... creeped me out.
Well, you
to the point where
sure there was a spirit in the ductwork trying.
I
to
made Dave go down into the crawl space that we have.
Had to go down there,
and I was scared. I don't know what I was thinking. I almost was like, maybe there's someone under there, living under there. I don't know. I got creeped out.
Yeah.
He said, "There's nothing under there." Whatever. And so
you thought maybe a homeless person had broken into our house, gotten into the crawl space.
I don't know.
So now you Do you put the vents back and then they pop back out again?
They pop back
exactly
out again.
Exactly right.
And
exactly
there's no right. reason because they're returned. There's nothing that would force them out. So I had been kind of creeped out by this. And then one day I'm here by myself and I hear a and I thought, oh, that's the vent. That's the vent. So yeah. I go in and it was in our bedroom and it was the cat sitting over the vent with his massive grippy paw and he was clawing up the vent.
It's amazing and that moving he can it aside. Scoop it up and out.
It's horrific is what it is. So he's been going, Andrew, yeah. to all of the return air vents and like scraping them and popping them out and setting them aside.
Huh.
And he has not tried to get down
he
in there.
He doesn't try to get down in there.
He just pulls
like,
them
what
out.
What is his end game?
I don't know.
It's so weird.
So let me ask you a question. You don't have any floor vents anywhere else in the house. Like, are these the first floor vents you've ever had in the house?
Oh, no, we have floor
we
vents
have floor
all
vents,
over the
but
house.
They're metal.
Well, and so you said these are return vents, so this mm-hmm. is sucking air in.
Yeah.
And typical floor vents are supply vents, which is pushing air
yeah,
out.
Yeah, this is a return. Yeah. Huh.
So I wonder if it's like the whistling. I wonder if what's happening is because animals have more sensitive hearing than us, significantly.
Oh, look at this. Look at this.
And so,
wait a second here.
Check out the big brain on
So that's what I wonder is if they're
Andrew
making
will a, take your calls, listener. Do you have a question?
If they're making a whistling noise. That's actually hurting the cat's hearing.
Oh, my gosh.
You think you're annoyed.
You know what?
Yeah.
That is brilliant. And he's annoyed by it.
That's as good a theory as
any. And he thinks there might be something down there.
Yeah.
And then he pops it out and he doesn't hear anymore, probably.
I mean, you can see the return right over there, Andrew. I mean, you think that... I mean, to create a whistling sound, I would think there would have to be kind of...
But we don't know.
But who knows?
We don't know.
Yeah, that's a good theory.
That's a great theory.
That's a good theory. I like
that.
That's
a great theory.
Well, and I... As far as the cat goes, I don't think the cat's
applause for that
because your cat is pretty sensitive, right? I mean,
he's neurodivergent.
He was real sensitive when he sunk his claws into your thigh.
Oh, that's right.
Recording that night down
he chased
basement.
Me. The thing chased me through the house and like
the thing.
Normally, an animal will back down. So I tried the old stand my ground thing with this cat.
Stood your ground, yeah.
And that was not the right strategy.
No.
That thing just kept coming.
Oh, he will. But so we figured that out and I was like, oh, thank God there's no one living in our home.
Yeah.
But here's the weird thing. So a couple days after that, I'm at a client's house and we're just chit-chatting while the hardwood floor guy measures for her house. Mm-hmm. And she tells me.
I'm sure he loves that.
Oh, he's great. Because then he came in and started talking to us and telling stories. So the client and him were telling ghost stories to me. And I love hearing people's ghost stories, so I just planted myself and like
great.
Just made encouraging noises so they would just keep going. So I have an arsenal of fresh ghost stories. But she told me she had been home alone the other night, and she watched something called frogging. Have you guys ever heard of P-H-R-O-G-G-I-N-G?
What? No.
Frogging.
What is this?
This is real. And this is where usually it's a person who doesn't have a home, or they're mentally ill and or mentally ill. They will... live inside someone's home without them knowing. So sometimes it's an older person who's living by themselves and they have a big home. That person will live in like spare bedrooms or in a basement.
Crawl space, yeah.
They have found people in crawl spaces. They have even gone so far as to, she was telling me, this one woman swore there was someone in her home. She marked the milk on the milk container.
Yeah, the level.
Like the level. Yeah. And it was down. Huh. And she knew she hadn't because she was like, I'm going crazy. God. There's someone here. And there was. There was someone there. They found people in people's crawl spaces, like Andrew said, like living.
Yeah.
Garden sheds, like all kinds of stuff.
Not the movie you want to watch. When
no. Yeah. And so, and this was a documentary. This wasn't even a movie.
Oh, man.
And you can look it up. It's online. There's all these stories.
Is there anybody here?
There's all these stories about frogging. And I thought, oh, thank goodness I saw the cat do that because I would be out of my mind with fear.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, frogging. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about leapfrogging?
Yeah.
Do we have anything on that?
I may have a fix for you. I'll tell you after the show.
Okay. Well,
all right. Does it? Why are you super glue, duct tape? What are we talking?
Nope.
You got to get in there to clean them, so you got to get it out.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, Andrew. Sorry. Like, my work here is done.
The show comes to a screeching halt.
Andrew, how have you been?
You know, it's the usual busy. I was really looking forward to the weekend, but of course, there's all this stuff going on. So I ended up having to work Saturday.
Oh.
You know, I'm getting text messages from my boss at like 6 in the morning on Saturday. And then you know, and then, you know, today I had to work. I was getting phone calls and stuff today on a holiday. And we support people internationally, too, so they don't really...
They don't have Labor Day.
And it's funny because the British, their holidays must be respected. But when it comes to when it comes time to respecting the American holidays,
that is true,
right? It's absolutely no respect for the American holidays.
They got the bank holidays over there.
And yeah, that's true.
And I warn them. I'm like, you know, if it's a holiday weekend in the U.S., don't come. You know, it's like solve the issue the week before.
That's true. Well, speaking of time, A.G. Riddle's got a great new book out. It's called Lost in Time. And let me tell you a little bit about this book. Now, this book has a great setup. This is set in the near future. When imagine this. Prisoners. And you got death row prisoners, right? Instead of being executed, what they do with them in this book, they are sent back into the past. But not just any random time in the past. Not like, oh, let's go send them back to the 50s, the 60s, the Victorian age, whatever. They are sent back to the Jurassic, Triassic era nothing to defend themselves with against the dinosaurs. And the company that created this time travel machine, which is only used for this purpose, by the way, is Absalom. Now, when one of the six founders of this company is found murdered, the CCTV footage shows that it is only her husband, Sam, and her 19-year-old daughter, Adeline, could have done it. Only one of those two. So, in order to save his daughter, Sam, this woman's husband, he confesses to the murder and is sent back to the land of the dinosaurs.
Wow.
Meanwhile, his daughter, Adeline, has to do everything she can to clear her father's name, as well as her own, and also to bring him back. This is a fast-paced, exciting, inventive thriller that flips back and forth from the present to the past. And if you ever wondered what it was like to live back with the dinosaurs, this is the book for you. So much fun. Every chapter ends with a cliffhanger that will have you turning the pages late into the night. I love this book. It is called Lost in Time, and here to talk all about it is A.G. Riddle. I loved your new book, Lost in Time. This is a tale of punitive time travel, survival, and giant prehistoric crocodiles. A.G. Riddle, what was it that inspired you to write this thrilling book? Very exciting. Really loved it.
Well, you know, I love time travel stories, and I wanted to write a story. Obviously, all of my novels are about advanced technology, so that's probably what got me started. But to me, the story is very much about family. So it's about, you know, father and daughter, you know, being sort of torn apart by events and then trying to reunite. And I think that, to me, you know, what all the whole world's been through with COVID, I think we all sort of feel like we're putting it back together. And I think that's probably in the backdrop and what, you know, was part of my thought process. But I think this story is a lot of fun in terms of you've got two very different characters, a father and a daughter in different time periods trying to solve this, what I think is a very different mystery. So that's kind of what got me started.
And it's fascinating to think of as a father myself, and I have a daughter, and you have this character, the father here, who has to really choose between near certain death for himself in order to save his daughter. Which just goes to answer the question, how far would you go to protect your child? And of course, I think, you know, any right thinking parent would do whatever it takes to do that for their kid. But it is very, very thought provoking. So at this, you have this thrilling story, but at the heart of it is this really, provocative novel.
Yeah. And I think, what I like about the story is that, you know, you get a sense of the characters pretty early by their choices and their extreme choices they have to make. And it sort of sets everything in motion.
Now, when you have to write a time travel novel, and you talk about you've been fans of stories, time travel stories, and who doesn't love a good time travel tome? Do you ever, I would assume when you're trying to, you know, figure out the plot machinations and all that, there has to be a certain point
where you take your laptop and throw it against the wall because you can't. Oh, it's all the permutations and the what ifs. Oh, yeah. And wait, if we go back in time and I change my outfit, and then, I mean, how do you not lose your, how many times did you really bang your head against the wall as you were writing? Was it, is it hard for you to write, or are you able to see through that?
The answer is yes. It's terribly arduous to write. It's actually, it becomes, it's a lot of fun early, and then it gets miserable. I mean, my problem is that, you know, my wife is very organized, right? And I am not. Like, I'm a very creative person, but yeah, man alive. I mean, I've just, like, even in our bedroom, stuff everywhere. And it's just like, and so writing a time travel, that is the worst. Like, you want to be creative. Right. I mean, you have to be creative in this field.
Yeah.
But you've also, like, you know, at some point deep in the novel, you've got to keep track of these timelines. And it's like, you're going back, rereading it. You've got scribbled notes everywhere. And it's just like, I wrote a time travel novel in 2015 called Departure. And I told my wife then, I was like, I'm never writing another one again. Like, I'm really proud of this book. And, yeah, and I think it turned out well, but, you know, just no thanks. And I guess, you know, 6 years is like my, that's how long it takes me to forget something. And here we are again. Mm. But, and I'm proud of this book too. So,
yeah.
But
do you like have big charts on the wall? Do you have timelines, or is it just like a little bit of everything all over the place, as you were saying?
Well, you know, my 6-year-old daughter has one of these rolling things of paper that, you know, she stretches out and like does her.
Oh yeah.
Let me see if I can get it off.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about.
So it's this Melissa and Doug.
Oh, right.
You know,
right.
So I've got these huge, you know, huge pieces of paper that chronicle all the events. And well, it's not only that, you know, it's the characters' bios, their life, like what happened to them on this date. And, you know, it's tough to keep up with. I mean, I need a spreadsheet, but I'm not, like I said, I'm not smart enough to be organized. So here we are.
Your kid's like, why is Daddy playing with all my stuff?
Can you I had to buy her another one? It's just like,
I mean, I like, it's nice to have it, to physically write it out and see it there. I think it's easy. And I'm like a visual person in that way as well. Like if I type it on a spreadsheet and you're looking on your computer and trying to figure out where it is, it just makes it too difficult. I like you have the big, you just roll out another sheet, put it up, and you know,
yeah.
I think if it's bigger, it's easier to follow along.
Yeah,
maybe. What do you got? Any good time? What do you have a favorite time travel? I'm trying to think. What was that one movie with Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Bruce Willis?
Oh yeah, Looper.
Looper. Yeah, that
was a good one. Yeah, I like that one. Oh man, I'm a sucker for a good time travel novel. I mean, you know, 12 Monkeys is that Bruce Willis movie. Yeah. That was one of my favorites. And you know, time travel novels. I mean, you got Hyperion. You've got Replay, that Ken Grimwood novel. Did you ever read that one?
I don't know that one. No.
Yeah, it's a good one. And it's a little like Groundhog Day, an old novel. I think it was written in the 80s, but. Yeah, and we could go on and on, but yeah, it's like, I don't know. I love it.
Well, speaking of going back in time, you send one of your characters back in time to live with the dinosaurs. Exciting. I just love this stuff. And I love that you go back and forth to this. So just when you're getting into the dinosaur stuff, you leave us with a cliffhanger and you go back to the present. So exciting. How long, and now he has to survive in this prehistoric vast wasteland with these dinosaurs. How long, if you had to go back, are you a survival man yourself? How long do you think you would last?
I was a Boy Scout.
Okay, me too. So shout out to the Boy Scouts. All right.
Shout out to the Boy Scouts. I didn't get my Eagle Scouts, so that I probably wouldn't survive. You know, I think I dropped out at Weeblos, but But I think, you know, I could probably survive maybe 60 years ago, you know, 100. Yeah. I don't think, I mean, 200 million years ago, I'm probably done in a month or something. Like I think I could probably manage to eat and make fire, but I don't know, long term.
Yeah.
I mean, I got the dad bod. I wouldn't be my top pick for Survivor.
You're trying to tell me you're not outracing any of these dinosaurs. Is that what you're trying to
do? No, I don't think. Yeah. I mean, the Triassic foot race is not something I'm going to win. But,
did you do
climb a tree?
That's my best one. Yeah. Climb a tree. Did you do a lot of research on that time period?
I did. Yeah. I mean, a lot of research on the, obviously, you know, the animals and the plants that he would encounter, and then, you know, a lot of it was speculation.
Yeah. Yeah. He eats bugs. Did you go so far? Are you a method writer? Did you eat some worms there?
I can't say I did. It was mostly DoorDash takeout when I was writing that section, but yeah.
Good idea. Good idea.
So the same thing. Yeah. I mean, pretty much.
All right. excuse me. So when you're, when you're writing, you like to write a book set in the future. How much time do you spend, you know, trying to figure out the technology and what that's going to look like? Like, what's your process there?
A good bit. I mean, so for me, it's a lot of it is about thinking about things that would fascinate me and that, you know, how would this impact the world of the future? And so the one, you know, at the center of the story is Absalom, this machine that they've invented that sends the world's worst criminals to the past. So this is, you know, terrorists, mass murderers, you know, genocidal dictators, serial killers, you know, people that the world or the government has decided, look, this is a really bad crime. We want to get rid of this person. And, you know, I had to think about, you know, how would that change the world? I mean, obviously, I think there's some people who are against capital punishment who would, you know, inherently be against a machine like that. And there's some people who would say, yes, you know, we want that machine and we think that it prevents crime. And I think it's an interesting social question. And then from a technology standpoint, you know, there's a lot of speculation there. I mean, we know that time travel, to a certain degree is possible. You know, in heavy gravity, time moves slower. And then at high speed, time moves slower. You know, you can slow the progression of time, but, you know, the idea of sending objects back in time is not really feasible with our current understanding of quantum mechanics, but I think it's a fun sort of thought experiment. And I think that, to me, that's what future technology is about to a certain degree.
Yeah. And it's just fun to think about, you know, what if that were possible? Was that something you would do? Would you send the criminals back in time? I think I feel like it's better than capital punishment because you at least can feel like you give them a fighting chance to survive, even though they won't. And you can, you know, think about how much fun it would be to have a T-Rex chomp down on, you know, Saddam Hussein or something like that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, you know, if you think about the worst criminal, you know, someone who you did something completely reprehensible, and you can guarantee that they'll never do it again and that they won't, you know, be a burden to society and things like that. I don't know. I mean, it's something that, it's something I think, I hope readers will think about, and, you know, it's interesting to think about.
It is. Do you have any, interesting, writing quirks that you do, as you write besides order DoorDash incessantly?
Well, I obviously pace and gnash my teeth when I get the timelines messed up, and, that's probably my biggest quirk, but I would say that, you know, when I'm writing, I love to really be focused on the story. And so to do that, I typically write on a Neo Writer, which is sort of this digital typewriter that has no internet.
Oh, wow.
I'm not a terribly good speller. Yeah. And so I use this that doesn't highlight my misspellings, and it helps me get my drafts out. And then I bring those into Scrivener, where I sort of edit and adapt the drafts. And so that's another reason I need those huge long sheets of paper, is because when I'm doing my drafts, I'm not in front of my computer. So I like to write my drafts away from my computer, and I find that's very productive and creates a good draft to work from. And then I sort of do my second and third draft on the computer.
That's interesting. Yeah, because I feel like you know yourself well enough that you're just going to get distracted. So what can we do to eliminate? I mean, that machine you showed me, it looks like something from the 80s. I don't know.
I think it is. It's a, well, you could go on eBay and you get, if you,
really?
If you search for NEO, Neo Writer, I think they used to use these in schools, you know, for kids learning typing or whatever.
Yep, yeah, for sure.
Like I said, it's got a little USB port here. So you plug it in and you download it. It's just text, but it works for me.
I think it's hilarious for a guy like you who writes about futuristic stuff, who's working on something from the 50s. That's
I still use a flip phone, too. You know, I don't have a smart. I'm just kidding.
Okay. I was going to say, you don't see too many. I did have a couple students last year who had flip phones, but that's
good. I'm getting a palm tree next year. But
okay. Yeah. Now, listen, let's talk about the structure of the book. Like I was mentioning, how we go back to the past and then to the present. And then each time you leave us with a cliffhanger. Is that something you spent a lot of time? Is that something you really wanted to make sure to do? It really just kept the pace going. You
know, I'd be like, oh, one more. I got to, you know, I couldn't stop reading because you kept leaving me hanging.
Yeah, that was very purposeful. I mean, I wanted, you know, one of the things I wanted to do with the story was play with pace. I'm someone who outlines, and I think for a story like this, an outline is fairly important. But I wanted the pace to sort of, you know, to have this really gripping, inciting incident when Sam and his daughter are arrested. And right. then wanted the pace to build gradually and then to just be something where, you know, the characters feel like they're out of control. And you as the reader feel like, man, this is out of control. I don't know what's going to happen next. And yeah. and so I think ending those chapters, you know, on scenes where there was a lot of looming uncertainty helps to create that effect. And but yeah, I had to really think through those. It's like, and you know, chapter length and the pacing, varying that a bit, I think helps with the effect. And then figuring out, okay, should this be in this chapter or the next is, I think, pretty big decisions in a novel like this.
Mm-hmm. I was reading that you read your outlines out loud. You dictate them.
Yes.
Is that something you do? Do you find that it helps you to speak it out loud?
I do, yeah. I mean, I will write out like a, you know, broad outline of the book, and then I'll use this sort of dictation device, which I, you know, pace around, and I'll, and that helps me because I do think exercising while you're sort of brainstorming helps. You know, it can just be walking or something like that.
I agree.
And,
yeah.
I think it's great to just throw out a bunch of ideas, and there's like no bad ideas for me anyway when I'm outlining, and then. Like I get the outline on the computer and I'm like, I don't think that's going to work. Or this seems like a little anachronistic. And then when you write the novel, it's like you get to know the characters better. And you're like, well, you know, this character would not do this. And this really doesn't work. So for me, the outline is a bit of a recursive process. But yeah, dictating it helps me a lot, actually.
That's great. And what's your writing routine like? You get up early in the morning and write?
I typically do. I mean, I think that those 3 or 4 hours in the morning are my best write. That's when I write, and I don't have many more productive hours after that.
Now, you are a great success story. You started out by self-publishing your work on Amazon, isn't that correct?
Yeah. You know, I've been a lifelong reader, and I never really thought about being a writer until in my late 20s, early 30s. I had a career in internet startups, and that, you know, we sold the last company, and I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life and what was next. And, you know, writing, I spent 2.5 years writing that first book, and I didn't know anything about the publishing industry. And I, you know, the idea of like querying an agent or trying to get a publisher, I was very foreign to me. And also wanted to figure out if there was really a market for my work. And so, you know, putting something on the internet and trying to get people to try it is something that was very comfortable and familiar to me. So self-publishing on Amazon felt like the right step to figure out, is there a market for my work? You know, is this something I should be doing, or should I just go do something else? My wife, you know, I've been writing this book for 2.5 years, and she's like, you've got to take the next step. I don't know what it is for you, but you cannot work in isolation for years at a time. Sure. It's just not healthy, which I agree with. And so self-publishing for me at that time was, I think, the right move, and certainly sort of helped me sort of try to figure out what the next step is. And I think in your writing career, that's what we're all trying to figure out, right?
And so that one just found an audience organically, huh? Yeah.
It did. I mean, it really took off in a way that I didn't expect. I mean, I was proud of that book, and I thought I'd done the best work I could, and still proud of it. But yeah, it took off.
What books were you reading growing up?
Oh, growing up. So, you know, Hatchet by Gary Paulson. Yeah, you ever read that novel?
Yeah. Yes, I was going to ask you about that when you mentioned in the book. What a great book. I taught that when I was working in a middle school in Florida, by the way. Yeah.
Oh, did you? Yeah.
Kids loved it. I loved it. It's a great book.
It remains one of my favorite books. And, you know, I really like that. I mean, you know, that's a survival tale. And I think, you know, maybe that is what sort of appealed with Sam's journey and Lost in Time to me. But, you know, I love that. And, you know, as a kid, I used to read Star Trek novels because, you know, I love Star Trek and the X-Files. And so that I would read those because I couldn't get enough episodes. And I must remain a huge fan of Hyperion, you know, the Dan Simmons novel, which I just adore. And yeah, I mean, I would sort of, as a kid, I don't know that I had sort of very, you know, advanced literary taste. I just love science fiction and anything in space, you know, Ender's Game and stuff like that. Yeah.
Dan Simmons is great. That guy can write anything. I mean, he writes sci-fi, hardcore sci-fi. He writes horror, the best horror. Carrying Comfort was one of the best horror books I've ever read in my life. Yeah. He writes thrillers, detective ghost stories. I mean, that guy can do it all. That guy,
he's got a lot of range. He's a great writer.
He does have a lot of range. So what is your favorite part of the whole writing process for you? Walking around with your little dictaphone, like some kind of private... I picture you like a private investigator pacing around the room.
My 6-year-old daughter, I was watching her while my wife slept the other morning, and she was just like, "Dad, this is weird." And I was like, "I know this is weird, but I've got to get these ideas out or I'm going to lose them."
Daddy's working!
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, it's a popular look around here. But I think my favorite part by far is writing the drafts. I mean, that's when I'm happiest. You know, the editing process, boy, I really, the wheels fall off. I mean, I get through it. It's a grind for me, but I it's work. But I, you know, I love that. I love writing the draft when the story starts to come alive and surprise me, and the characters start to feel real and they do things that I really wasn't planning, wasn't expecting. As a reader, I mean, I love reading something where there's this big twist and surprise. But I think for a writer, there's some of that effect too, you know, and you're writing something that's like, oh man, you know, I created this, but it's got a life of its own. And that's really fun.
Yeah, that must be just a great feeling when they start acting for themselves, you know?
Yeah.
It's like your creations are all grown up. Look at that.
Exactly.
What do you like to do when you're not writing there in North Carolina?
Yeah, well, you know, we've got some good places to do mountain biking here. And I have a 1-year-old son and a 6-year-old daughter. So like when I'm not writing, I'm changing poopy diapers. I'm, you know, shoving some baby food, or, you know, we're running here and there. So it's, so I would say being a dad is, you know, what I do when I'm not writing, and it keeps me pretty busy. Nice. And I'm very thankful for it.
Nice and quiet there in your house with two young kids around.
Well, our daughter is at camp. If she's in the house, it's not quiet.
Okay. All right.
My son is napping.
No, so, perfect. Yeah, perfect. Very good.
It's sort of like we were trying to time his nap for this and got lucky.
Good, yeah. good. All right, well, it is time now for our segment we call Quick Six. These are six quick questions in which we find out just a little bit more about you. Here we go. A.G. Riddle, what is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
Oh, man. What did we just watch? Okay, we're watching 5 Days at Memorial right now, but there was one before that. The last season of Peaky Blinders. Really enjoyed it.
Oh, I haven't seen the last season yet. Good one? It's good?
Amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, the writing in that, I mean, the dialogue, really, I was impressed.
All right, cool. I will definitely check that out. How about this? What fictional world or place would you like to visit?
Star Trek.
You want to get on board the Enterprise? Now, are we talking like the old school Shatner? Are we talking next gen? What are we talking?
We're talking 1701D, TNG, Next Generation, you know, Captain Picard, Riker, you know, Data. I need Lieutenant Commander Geordi LaForge. That's where I would live.
I always felt jealous. My sister and my dad would watch Star Trek together, and I could never, it just never resonated with me. They always had this connection. They're like, they would even went to, you know, Star Trek conventions and everything. And I don't know.
Well, yeah, I don't feel bad. I mean, I think that's the reason you've flourished in life, and you weren't a big enough geek. And so, you know, I think there's hope for you. And,
okay. All
yeah,
right.
I couldn't get enough of it. I mean, yeah. There's something very wrong with me. But yeah.
No, it's a lot of. I always love, of course, when I think of Star Trek, I always think of William Shatner on Saturday Night Live when he's at the Star Trek convention and he tells everyone there to get a life, get out of your parents' basement. You know, and Phil Hartman rushes over and says something. It's like, that was the evil Captain Kirk from episode
8. Yeah. Yeah. The alternate universe, the mirror universe.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, that was so funny. All right. Next question. How about this? Give me one of your top five favorite movies of all time.
I would go with 12 Monkeys. Yeah.
Oh, you would? Really?
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very good. Nice. And a top five favorite book.
All right. I mean, I've already mentioned Hyperion, but I'll go with a one from Will McIntosh called Burning Midnight. It's a young adult novel that is fantastic.
Burning Midnight. Wow, that's a great
Burning name. Midnight, Will McIntosh.
All yep. right, cool. Very good. How about this? Do you have a go-to karaoke song?
No, I haven't been out on the karaoke circuit recently. And yeah, anything I go to is probably going to go bad. So,
all right. No karaoke singing for you. Very good. And do you listen to music when you write? Do you have?
I do. Yeah. Sometimes, but I usually listen to classical music or something like that. If it has words, it kind of trips me up a little.
You like the Avett Brothers? We're big Avett Brothers fans. I think they're from North.
Do like the Avett Brothers? Yeah. Bon Iver. Yeah.
They come out and they play Red Rocks here in Colorado. We always check them out.
Oh, nice.
All right, and finally, A.G. Riddle, what book are you currently reading?
Oh, I'm reading Heat 2, and I love it.
I just talked to, not Michael Mann, but the...
Meg Garner,
yeah.
It's an amazing novel. I'm, you know, 10% in and truly enjoying it.
Yeah, that's a good one. And a good excuse to go back and watch the movie.
It is. I mean, I've got my wife up for rewatching it, so that's cool.
That's good. It holds up. All right. Well, listen, I loved your book, Lost in Time, and thanks so much for spending a little time with me. Now, don't wake up that baby and enjoy your free time.
I think he's out. I just heard him, but yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me. I truly, and thank you for reading the book. I appreciate it.
Of course. Absolutely. All right. I loved it. All right. Take care.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye. The Inside Flap. Right, there you go. That was the great A.G. Riddle, and I know, Andrew, you're a big fan of his as well.
Yeah, I've read the Atlantis Gene in the series. I mean, you know, great book. Aliens, viruses, conspiracies. I mean, what's not to love?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
But, you know, the book reminds me a little bit of a show I used to watch as a kid.
Oh, really? What's that?
Land of the Lost.
I don't remember that
one. Oh, yeah. See, I never saw that show.
Yeah, so Land of the Lost is... Somehow these people, right? It's a family,
right?
And they basically get sent back in time to a planet with it's like a prehistoric planet with dinosaurs.
Right. I knew it was one of those terrible Hanna-Barbera shows.
Oh, it was bad. It was bad. Yeah. I didn't say it was good.
No. I mean, we didn't have many options back then.
It was still fascinating.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's fun to think about.
That's true.
Yeah. And this book sounds like it takes that premise.
Mm-hmm.
Puts a realistic twist on it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It sounds really cool.
Oh, it is a great book. It is a great book. Check it out. So thanks to A.G. Riddle for coming on. Now let's open it up.
The library is officially open.
Time for some
book reviews.
Let's start with
Laura Medicus.
Where we are, I don't know where we are. But
Laura, what do you have for us this week?
I have a book called One by One by Ruth Ware, and I've read a couple thrillers with similar settings, and I really like this setting. I call this the Isolated Snowpocalypse Thriller.
Oh, okay.
So this one's set in the French Alps at a small resort that caters to smaller family reunions, small company retreats, like Andrew's company could buy some time there, do a little company retreat, you know, like a couples retreat, that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
So it doesn't hold a lot of people there. So... there's a young social media company, not Andrew's company, that's renting all the rooms. And they're a social music app called Snoop. So,
like Snoop Dogg.
Kind of. It's more like I'm going to snoop in on what you're listening to. So you can listen to the same thing your friend is listening to, or your boyfriend or your girlfriend, or you could listen to, like, I don't know, what Sting is listening to. Or I'll use Brad Pitt since we saw a Brad Pitt right. movie last night. What's Brad Pitt listening to? So that's what it's all. That's all that it
that
does.
That is awesome. I would love to know what all my favorite celebrities are listening to.
It kind of would be funny because you're listening to them. You're listening to it at the same time they are, which some people like.
Well, you know, that's like you can buy a piano.
Yes, you can.
That when Elton John sits down at his piano, we'll start playing what he's playing.
That blows my mind.
I mean, isn't that, that's the most insane. That's
it
what
absolutely
I,
blows
anybody
my
out
mind.
There listening for a good Christmas present for Laura and I this Christmas, or maybe just for me.
It's like a $10,000 add-on.
Is
I don't
it?
Even,
oh,
yeah.
That's not,
just
that's
to get the player
bad.
Piano. I don't know how much the Elton John channel costs.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the Sting channel.
Because I have a client with like just a grand piano, and you can add these little things to it, so it'll play for you, like a play, an old-fashioned
like
player piano.
Yeah.
But it's like a real piano. It doesn't have to be a quote-unquote player piano, if you know what I mean. Right, like the old papers they used to use.
Right.
So
rolls of paper.
Yeah. So there are two people running this resort. There's a chef named Danny, and he also helps with housekeeping. But there's also a young woman named Erin, and she handles the guests. She keeps things running smoothly. Mm-hmm. You know, shows people how to have a good time there. Like, here's where you rent your skis and blah, blah, blah. So we have 12 people in this book to keep track of. Oh. And I think the author does a really good job of kind of letting you know who's who. There's distinct personalities. It's told from a few different perspectives. So this is a locked room mystery. And the title is One by One. So you kind of know what you're getting into.
Okay, yeah. Kind of like a 10 Little Indians. Yes. Or, and then there were none. Yes. I guess I should say Agatha Christie.
Yep. When you say 12 characters, I'm thinking, man, please tell me they get knocked off.
Yeah, they get knocked off one by one.
Oh, nice.
Oh, there's a blizzard coming in the French Alps.
Of course.
Oh, maybe there's going to be an avalanche that's going to knock out power. Maybe they'll be stuck at the chalet with a murderer around. So sure enough, blizzard's coming in. One person goes missing. It could have been a skiing accident. So everyone's like, well, you know, we'll see. We can't get out right now to help her. Not sure. But then when another person's die, and this person's clearly murdered, you know, maybe that skiing accident wasn't really an accident at all. And this company's going through some change. So they could be doing an IPO, initial public offering. They also have a nice offer on the table to be bought out by like a Spotify type, good money. So, you know, half the group wants to do one, half the group wants to do the other.
That Joe Rogan money.
That's right. So I liked the pending doom. I love the pending doom of this big blizzard. I like the idea of a murderer running around an isolated ski chalet. I mean, who wouldn't like that? Especially in the dark, because there's no cell phone service. There's no, you know, electricity anymore. Right. And I loved the French Alps setting. Mm-hmm. And then one thing, they mention a resort called Chamonix.
Oh yeah, Chamonix.
So you know Chamonix? Sure. I was wondering if you did. It's at the base of Mont Blanc.
Right. Mm-hmm. I knew it from the Tour de France. Andrew knows it from
living over there.
Let me tell you how I know it. And this is embarrassing. Okay. So I go to stone yards with clients a ton. Like we walk around, we look at stone. There's this one stone that I have clients that really like, that they love the stone for their kitchen. It's a quartzite, a natural stone with a high quartz content. And I start calling it Chamonix because I'm from Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh boy.
I may seem fancy because of my job, but I am not fancy. Yeah. So finally they correct me and the wife goes, actually, it's Chamonix. And I was like, it's not Chamonix. Mm. Yeah, so
at least they corrected you and you didn't find out about it later.
I felt bad that I had to be corrected, but you're right. Maybe it was nice of her to correct me. I don't know. Yeah. She said it in a way that made me think that possibly she had been there too. Mm. And I could picture her skiing as soon as she said that in like a cute outfit. And I was like, oh, yeah, this girl doesn't ski.
No.
I grew up swimming in ponds with alligators.
With alligators, right.
So the other thing I wanted to say is Ruth Ware, this author, she sells a lot of books.
She does.
She's like an airport writer. You'll see her books everywhere at airports. She writes fast-paced thrillers. I think it's easy for people on Goodreads to get up on like a weird high horse because she's successful.
That's true, yeah.
And I just get tired of book snobs. Mm-hmm. If you aren't this type of reader, like if you know Ruth Ware isn't for you, why bother picking the book up and then leaving her a 2-star review? Like, you know, I know books aren't for everybody. This is a book, you can read it in a Friday night if you're by yourself and you want something to do. Mm-hmm. You can read it over a busy weekend if you don't have trouble concentrating on stuff, you're picking the kids up somewhere, just read the book. You can read it on an airplane flight. Like, it's that kind of book. I really enjoyed it.
Read it during a Zoom meeting with toothpaste around your mouth?
Betcha you could figure out a way to read it that way too.
Great. Andrew, there you go.
Yeah. So it's called One by One. It's enjoyable. It's a snowpocalypse thriller.
All right. And that is recommended by
Laura Medicus.
And my book this week,
Dave Medicus. This is why we can't have nice.
By the way, I have a new, new class this year, new group of freshmen, and they are very excited that I have so many Taylor Swift fans in my
Swifties
class right now. Oh, and also a lot of, speaking of Andrew's walk-up music, which we'll get to in a little bit, a lot of Weird Al fans in my class.
They've liked his poster.
As I've hung up the signed poster of Weird Al in my room from the concert we went to. And every day I get someone else coming up and saying how much they enjoy Weird Al. So a lot of Weird Al and Taylor Swift fans. So, you know, the walk-up music is spreading. It's gaining in popularity. Anyway, my book this week. Yes, Andrew.
So the Roku, one of the Roku premiere movies on the Roku channel is the,
oh, that's
the
right.
Weird Al life story.
Oh. When is that? Is that out now?
Early November is when it's coming
early
out.
Early November,
yeah,
okay.
But they just released a new trailer.
With Harry Potter, right?
Yes, with Daniel Radcliffe.
Daniel Radcliffe.
As Weird Al.
As Weird Al.
So wild.
So, and there's a Weird Al cameo in there, as my son pointed out in the trailer.
Oh, really?
But the family's, you know, just very excited. But, you know, the guy's had one heck of a career. I mean, he really has, and he's invented his own genre, really.
Yes.
You know, I hope he makes it into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame one day.
Yeah, let's see. I mean, for someone to make a living writing wacky, goofy songs that make fun of other songs, pretty impressive. All right. Well, anyway, speaking of impressive, my book this week is The Local by Joey Hartstone. Now, this is a crackling good murder mystery legal thriller with a ton of great courtroom action and a lot of local flavor, as you might expect with a book called The Local, which the title refers to the main character and our narrator in this book, James Euchre. He is a patent lawyer in Marshall, Texas, who lends his local connections and flair to curry flavor with juries for clients who have come from all over the country to have their cases heard in Marshall, which this little town of Marshall, Texas, is known for their patent infringement cases. So they come down there, the legal team comes down with the client, and this guy is, you know, he gives the end courtroom speech, and he's there to, because the jury likes the local flavor, and he's a kind of a lawyer for hire, and he does very well at what he does. Hmm. Now, his new client, Amir Zawar, is being sued for patent infringement, and at the preliminary hearing, Amir loses his cool in court. He cusses out the judge and threatens him. Now, before you can say contempt of court, the judge in question, Judge Gardner, is found murdered in the courthouse parking lot. And, of course, suspect number one is Amir. Now, adding to the intrigue is that Judge Gardner was a sort of father figure to Euchre, and now he finds himself having to suddenly act as a defense attorney for Zawar and prove his innocence, even though he's not necessarily sure he's innocent. Hmm. I love the voice of this guy. He's got this kind of a laid-back, laissez-faire attitude in this lawyer, James Euchre. He's an easygoing character with southern charm. He's also a hard-drinking guy, a guy who cracks open a pack of Marlboros every time he wins a case. And the idea of him as a lawyer for hire for the local connections is interesting, as is the fact that he has to do kind of a 180 and learn how to be a defense attorney from being a patent attorney all his life. The mystery deepens even further as the book progresses, keeping the story moving forward. There's a nice love interest for him, and his feelings for the murdered judge add a level of depth and resonance to his character that you can't help but pull for. And listen, this has got some great... I know the author, Joey Hartstone, has written some movies. Both movies, by the way, directed by Rob Reiner. But I'm not sure if he was a lawyer, but the courtroom scenes really crackle in this one. They really stand out.
I like a good courtroom scene.
I mean, what's not to love about a good... You got all the cross-examinations, the objections, the judge, come to my office now. You know, he pulls the lawyers, all that good stuff. Everything
you
love in the courtroom scene is in this one. If you like legal thrillers with flair and color, you love this one. Check it out. The Local by Joey Hartstone. Mm-hmm. All right, Andrew.
Don't stop, make it pop, DJ blow my speakers up tonight.
So I've discovered
speaking of Weird Al,
a new author.
Ah.
And this author has authored 84 novels.
Wow.
So new to you then.
Well, new to me.
Isn't that the best when you discover somebody
84.
And maybe a whole wealth of stuff.
Maybe also maybe new to the US as well. Mm. And so this guy is from Australia. His name is Timothy Ellis.
Hello, Timothy.
And his books are, you know, so just fantasy.
Such a rube.
Different genres in fantasy. Mm-hmm. But he is, you know, he's from Australia, and his books are popular in the UK and Australia. So I don't know how popular his books are in the US,
But you know,
well, it's all going to turn around right now.
That's right.
Depending on this recommendation, let's bring it.
Absolutely. And so,
okay.
I've read
Pressure's
book number one of 84.
Okay,
and he writes
is this an 84 book series.
No, it is not.
Okay.
Yeah,
like the Hardy.
I think he's got like, you know, he's got like 7 or 8 different series, and this is his newest one.
Ah, okay.
And the book is called Old Magic.
Olden.
Old Magic.
Old.
Old Magic.
Yep, and the second book in the series is called More Old Magic. Right? So, yeah. You know, I read to escape, and I've noticed that there is sort of a genre, you know, a genre of books, of fantasy books, about people that are getting old, right? And there's fantasy and there's science fiction.
There are.
Where magic and or science basically solves getting old.
Oh, no, I was going to say right? Something else. Never mind.
And so you're...
Settle down, everybody, yeah, Skippy.
So you're like, you know, you're getting to the point where you're really in the twilight of your life. And, you know, the next thing you know, magic.
You get a reboot.
You get a reboot. Or science. You get a reboot, you know? Right. And so, you know, I don't know if I was 20 years old that this would appeal to me, but I'm not 20.
So it's middle-aged fantasy fiction.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Joe Vincent, he is an author, and he, you know, he is a successful author. He like stays up late every night and writes. You know, he has a nose to the grindstone, and I really feel like this book has to be a bit autobiographical for Timothy Ellis. And so, you know, Joe is writing this book and he turned 70 and he is a hermit. Like he describes himself as a hermit.
All right.
You know, it's not that he's super antisocial. It's just, this is just his life. It's what he enjoys doing.
Hmm.
You know, he drinks, he writes, you know, he just stays in his house. He has a very efficient lifestyle. But he's a hermit. And so he turns 70 and he notices when he wakes up that morning and he lives in this character lives in the Gold Coast of Florida. And I didn't actually look to see if Timothy Ellis actually also lives in the Gold Coast.
Where's the
Florida.
Gold Coast?
Oh, sorry, of Australia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because
we're all trying to figure out.
Well, there's a Gold Coast in Florida, but this is the Gold Coast of Australia.
What's the Gold Coast in Florida? Is that Miami?
I think it's near Miami.
Hmm. They have a lot of coasts now. When I was growing up, they didn't really have it, but then they've labeled a bunch of stuff.
And I think it's called the Gold Coast in Florida, where it's where a lot of treasure.
South Florida includes Miami and Florida.
So it's the wealth. It's the wealthy area.
But no, this is the Gold Coast of Australia.
Nice. Right.
And so he wakes up and he starts noticing that weird things are happening, right? And so, you know, his alarm clock, like magically, like, you know, is turned off. And he's like, well, what happened there? And so strange things start happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody knocks on the door and says, hey, you know, I'm here to tell you about your magic. And you know, he's like, well...
I love books like that.
Yeah. He's like, well...
yeah.
You know, and he doesn't know whether to quite believe me. He's like, well...
We're all ready for someone to knock on the door, Dave. You're looking at Andrew and I skeptically.
Yeah.
And tell us about magic that we didn't know that we had.
Okay. Hey.
Okay. Of course, when I was listening to your vent story, I was thinking that maybe rats were going to be crawling
into
your house. So.
Andrew, well,
thanks for not voicing
it. I had that too.
Yeah.
I had that too. Yeah. I hadn't voiced that one out loud.
Yeah.
That was another, there was so many different things I had actually thought.
So, you know, this is kind of like, you know, a sort of a happy-go-lucky book. I mean, Joe is just kind of going along with the flow. So the welcome committee shows up. They explain to him, you know, well, when you turn 70 for some reason, some people basically discover magic, right? And it's not a large community.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty small community, and they have been keeping magic secret.
Select individuals.
Yep. And so the welcome committee invites them to a party. And, of course, they turn like an unused. They say, well, you have a door that you don't use often. He's like, oh, there's a door in the garage I never use, right? Probably to go out into the backyard. He's like, oh. And so they magically make that door a portal.
Ooh.
And so that door takes him to like the magic user's party, you know, so now he's starting to become more social, whether he wants to or not.
So when you go through that door, you're in the world where all these other oldsters, magic people are.
It just transports him to somewhere
like
else.
Like a magical realm.
Yeah, somewhere else in Australia.
Okay.
It's still Australia.
Okay.
It's just, it's a gathering. It's a gathering of the magical community.
Okay.
And part of this book is, it's balancing like, How would you, if magic really did exist, how would you balance the real world with regular magic?
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, we've seen this premise before, too,
is that, of course, Joe's magic is not like anybody else's magic.
Oh, man, so many. Of course, and it's always like the best they've ever seen, the strongest, or, oh, you have this ability and this ability? Yeah.
Yeah, and so he's watching TV, and he basically just says, you know, everything on the news, he's like, it's all just lies. And his magic, all of a sudden, basically the teleprompter turns on around the world, and it basically, you know, says on the teleprompter, lies, lies. So it's like a truth detector, which shows up on the TV, and they basically say, oh, it's a hacker. It's basically a hacker that's done it, but it's his magic that has done it, because his magic is very powerful. And this book ends, and there's still a mystery in terms of, you know, who is he, and who is he connected to?
Now, is he getting younger?
Not younger, necessarily, but, you know, they'll kind of stay at 70, and there's speculation that he's going to live, you know, to 100 and some plus years.
Wow.
Right, that he has a chance of being very long-lived. Now, there's another character that comes in this book, and he is a young man, and he claims that he is Merlin, the magician, like the Merlin.
Yeah.
All right, now we're getting somewhere.
And this Merlin is basically out there fighting space battles, but he supposedly is the Merlin. And Merlin is obviously extremely powerful, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he starts talking about all these things. Well, Merlin can also jump around in time. So he has the ability to kind of see the future. He can jump around in time. He can basically go from, you know, one side of the galaxy to the other. And he...
Is he the old Merlin with the beard?
No, he's the young. He's young.
Oh, okay.
And so...
stay with
us here. So he confides in Joe that he is Merlin. And Joe has the ability to tell whether people are telling the truth or not.
Mm, he's a truth seeker.
Right? So he knows, he's like, well, the guy says he's Merlin, and I know he's not lying. Right? And so I guess it's whether it's good or bad. I mean, imagine if you actually had the innate ability to actually tell whether somebody was telling the truth or not. You know? I mean,
I think you would start to understand that most people lie about a lot of different things.
Right.
And so you probably would just get used to certain things. Don't you think?
And people lie for different reasons.
Exactly.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, the first book, I mean, it's Joe's, you know, things. And as far as the magic goes, you know, some of the magic is magic doorways. Some of them you can do like instant home renovations. Like he's, you know, there's a guy that comes in. He's like, okay, ready, close your eyes. And he can basically touch a plan and, you know, and completely
bring it to life,
completely remodel your room or your house. Basically with just magic.
Wow.
I mean, how nice would that be?
That's, and of course, really nice.
You know, and of course Joe has, you know, he's got all sorts of magic capabilities. Like he has a wide range of magic. Like he's able to make his solar system super efficient. Right. You know, saving everybody money, and he can barter that ability. But the book ends and it's still a mystery of who Joe is and what's going on. And it may be that there's a disaster about to happen. And COVID also takes place in this book.
Oh.
And they don't call it, he doesn't call it COVID, but it basically, it's a virus that starts like COVID and they kind of know it's coming. But of course they're able to create these magic doorways that detect COVID. And so you can't go through the magic doorways unless you're COVID free. But you know, it's interesting that it clearly is COVID that inspired this, and how he's kind of woven it into his story.
That's fun.
And how life, you know, life changes. So it's also, you know, like I said, what's interesting about this book is it's really trying to blend magic and into the real world, right? And trying to do that in a very, you know, realistic, pragmatic way. But this is the first book. He's working on the third book in the series, but it is called Old Magic by Timothy Ellis.
All right. Recommended by
Andrew Dowd.
Which means it's time for
Audiobook of the Week.
The Audiobook of the Week. And I got a good one for you this week. It's called The Heights by Louise Candlish, read by Genevieve Gaunt, Milo Tuomi, and Louise Candlish herself. Now, yes, indeed. I love Louise. She's been on the show before. Big fan of her stuff. I always make a point of grabbing her new books when they come out. I saw this one out, so naturally got the audiobook from the library, and I found this one just to be an excellent thriller mystery. I love all her stuff, and this is no exception. The Heights is a... So what the title refers to, The Heights, it's a tall, thin apartment building in London where a woman named Ellen Saint sees a man standing on a terrace, and she cannot believe her eyes. She is sure she's looking at a dead man. How can she be sure of this?
because she is the one who killed him.
Ooh, what a good premise.
Isn't that a great premise? Yeah. So this is told in flashback form as Ellen tells us early on that she's in a writing class and she's writing up this story as a book because it's just too fantastic a story not to be written up, and interspersed throughout are highlights from a Sunday Times article written about Ellen, and these are the parts that Louise Candlish narrates. So what's going on with Ellen? Ellen is a woman consumed with hate and rage. Hatred towards a young man named Kieran Watts, who she believes ruined her son Lucas's life when they became friends at school, and immediately this guy Kieran was a bad influence on her son Lucas, right up to the point where Kieran crashed a car with Lucas in it and kills him. And this leads Ellen on a mission to destroy Kieran's life, even if that means killing him herself. Then, as with all of Louise Candlish's books, it becomes extremely dark. It is very well written. It is incredibly plotted out. And we go down a windy, twisty road that is dark and dangerous. There's also a separate narrative voice in the second half of the book that we hear from, and that is Louise, Lucas's father. And that becomes very illuminating and sheds everything in a new light. What I love about this book is that you really, truly never know how things are going to resolve until the very end, when everything comes together. And I have to say that the ending to this one is fantastic. I got chills listening to that ending, and it brought the book to an incredible conclusion. Love this one. Let's take a listen to a clip. This is The Heights by Louise Candlish.
Kieran Watts is the monster who destroyed my life, whose actions will torment my soul until my dying day and perhaps even beyond. I wouldn't put it past him. He is the reason I am writing this, the reason I am here. As I once said to my daughter Freya, not missing the look of revulsion on her face, I will never forgive him. I mean it. Never.
Oh, that is your
audiobook of the week.
And that'll do it for us this week. Thanks to A.G. Riddle, the disorganized A.G. Riddle, for coming by and talking to us about his book, Lost in Time. And check it out. If you really, really gave a great example of what it must be like back in the dinosaur age, and just a fantastic thriller to boot. So check that one out, and we thank him for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus. See you next week.
Adios.
Excelsior.
I got the dad bod.